I honestly want to thank you for coming to church this morning. And I mean this as something more than just an agreeable, nice, polite thing to say, which I hope may become clear by the end of this sermon. I had said on more than one occasion, to me at least, Sunday morning always seems like a miracle. When I get here on Sunday mornings, there is no one here except for those of us whose job it is to be here. But then suddenly, there you are. It's a miracle to me. Not one of you actually has to be here. The church is an entirely voluntary organization. But here you are. Look around you. You can make furtive looks if you want. There are a few furtive. You could be anywhere else in the whole world right now, but here you are. And I have to be honest, sometimes I find myself wondering, what is it that has brought you here this morning? What are you doing in church today? What are you looking for? What are you hoping for? If you knew beforehand that we would be gathered in this sacred place to hear Jesus say to us, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple," would you still have thought that it was a good idea to come to church today? Is that what any of us wants to hear? It strikes me as not very nice, not very agreeable, rather rude. If you read the biblical commentaries on this passage, they sound a little bit like a political handler who comes in after their boss has made a speech and says, "Listen, what Jesus was trying to say was this." The big sticking point, of course, is this word hate. Hate my wife, my mother, my children? I don't think so. Okay, let me try to soften the blow a little with two possibilities. The first is from a little book that's in a shelf in my office that's entitled The Linguistic Key to the Greek New Testament. And it tries to offer something reassuring to say about this passage. We'll see. The Greek verb for to hate is miso, which some Greek scholar quoted in this little resource book helpfully says means loving less. Okay, a second possibility. In Jesus' days, the rabbis in teaching would use this love-hate dichotomy as a teaching device, as a means of cutting through the fog and giving moral clarity about greater and lesser goods. In this same way, you might say, "I love the beach and I hate the mountains." Well, that doesn't mean that I actually hate the mountains. It just means that when push comes to shove, I prefer the beach over the mountains. There. Now, don't you feel better? And if you don't, neither do I. Jesus' words are provocative and bring us up short. So perhaps we could do him and his words the courtesy of starting from there, from that place of being brought up short. Now, in the narrative sweep, we know that Jesus is on the way to Jerusalem now. It is his final trip to Jerusalem. We know that what awaits him there is his cross, where our worst and most lost and God's best meet. And along the way, this large crowd of people have attached themselves to him and are traveling along with him along the way. And I find myself wondering about them too. Why are they there with him? Were they there just to see what all the fuss was about? Was it just something to do? Were they there because they were lost and needed finding in the dark and looking for light? Were they there because they thought they were running off with the circus that had just come to town, the way that people do sometimes? Or were they just there for the free food? Or maybe something else too, something they couldn't quite say yet, but it was something about him. Whatever it is that brings people to Jesus, he wants to be clear. Whatever it is that has brought you to him, being his disciple and bearing the good shepherd's deathless love into this world is going to cost you everything and yet give you everything. He even tells two stories about thinking through just what it is you're getting involved with and weighing the cost, and how you really should think about this first. Jesus is not here to tidy up our rough edges and make us nice and good and polite. He is here to change us. He is here to make you a new creation. I want to tell you a story about being brought up short in my life. I made two panicked phone calls last night, one to Bob and one to Amelia, saying, "Oh my Lord, have I told this story before?" And they both said, "Ah, don't worry about it. We'll see." When I was in eighth grade, I found that I had made some decisions about how I was going to get through what I called the long, dark hallway of adolescence. I decided I would keep my head down, follow all the rules, avoid talking to other people, be polite, agreeable, nice, and just sort of pray that I could fly under the radar and go unnoticed. So it didn't make for a terribly interesting life. I mostly lived up in my head, which was pretty limited. I was not choosing life, but it seemed like a fair trade. And one morning in homeroom class, that all changed. I was sitting at my desk, staring at a doodle on the desk, the same doodle that was there every day. And then the girl in the desk next to me slipped a folded note onto my desk. I just stared at it. "You see, other people got notes. I was not one of those people. Now what?" "I know what. I'll pretend as if nothing has happened. There." I heard the voice of the girl who had slipped the note onto my desk say, "Good grief! Read it!" I looked over at her tentatively and she rolled her eyes dramatically and said, "Read it!" Which seemed rude. This was exactly why I had decided to follow the rules, keep my head down, be polite, agreeable, nice, and try to go as unnoticed as humanly possible. Now what? "I know. I'll continue to pretend as if nothing has happened. I can make it to the bell." Well, the next thing I knew, this girl had reached over and unfolded the note to reveal the message and slammed it down onto my desk, which I thought was pushy. I read the note. "Oh no." The note read, "Marion Eichard thinks you're cute. Ask her out." And so I looked up and I saw Marion Eichert smiling at me. And life changed forever. Only love has the power to do that. These hard words of Jesus bring us up short to change us too for his love's sake. His words are not nice or polite or agreeable in the least, and they aren't meant to be. They are his cross-shaped words that in him declare you are a new creation. Disciples of Jesus live his life and nothing less, bringing light into the darkness, finding the lost, overcoming evil with good, lifting up the lowly, forgiving even as we are forgiven, costing everything, and yet behold, receiving the world. People are still gathering around Jesus to live his life, people just like you. And that is why I said, thank you for being here, for everything that brings people to Jesus, for this miracle of grace to live his life and nothing less. Amen.